This is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later in the hour, we'll be talking about living computers and the science behind the crystal skulls of the new Indiana Jones movie. But up first, the latest reports out of NASA say that its latest Mars spacecraft is healthy and on track to arrive this Sunday at its appointed landing site, a spot near the Martian North Pole. And if everything goes smoothly and the Phoenix spacecraft survives its entry and descent and landing, scientists will put it to work searching for signs of past life and water on the red planet. It has a robotic arm that will scrape and dig up the soil, scoop up samples for instruments on the lander to analyze. And eventually, scientists hope it will dig down deep enough to hit pay dirt. And in this case, it's more like pay water, water ice buried under the Arctic plain. The soil and the water ice, they suspect, could tell the story of water on the planet and may even contain evidence of past life in the form of organic molecules. We're joined now by the mission's top scientist with an update on the spacecraft's progress and a preview of its three-month mission. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. You can go over to our website at sciencefriday.com for more information. Also, in Second Life, you can find Science Friday's island. Peter Smith is a principal investigator for NASA's Phoenix Mars mission and senior research scientist in the Lunar and Planetary Laboratory at the University of Arizona in Tucson. He joins us today from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Smith.
Well, thank you, Ira. It's a pleasure to be back.
Getting a little nervous?
Yes. I woke up at 4 o'clock this morning, stared at the ceiling for a couple hours. I'm a little nervous.
I remember being there, I mean, for one of the early missions, the Viking missions back in the 70s. And this sort of reminds me of that mission.
Yes, it does. And it's very similar in that we're using thrusters again to go to the surface and not airbags.
Why are you doing that? Why the rovers all came down bouncing on airbags. They're coming down with the rockets.
Yeah, that's the best way to go, in my opinion. It's a lot more dignified when you arrive on another planet. And frankly, it costs a lot of weight to carry that airbag system along, and the thrusters are much more efficient. So we're going with thrusters.
Okay, we'll watch for it. And when is the most critical or dangerous or nail-biting part of the mission?
Well, it's that last 7 minutes when we hit the upper atmosphere at 12,000 miles an hour and go through what's basically a metamorphosis as our spacecraft goes from a cruise vehicle into a landed science lab.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about the science that's on there. Go through some of the experiments and what you hope to accomplish.
Well, there's three types of science we're doing. The first is we're a weather station on Mars. We can study clouds, pressure, temperature, winds, and even composition of the atmosphere. And secondly, we're a geologist on the surface, and we look at the distribution of rocks and the shapes of the patterns in the soil, particularly the ice-formed patterns, and we try and understand the formation of this interesting terrain in the northern plains. And finally, we're a science laboratory, and we deliver samples from the surface up to three instruments on the deck, a set of ovens that can bake the materials and drive off gases, which we analyze, a water system where we add water to soils, and we can tell the saltiness of the Martian soil and acidity, and finally a microscope station. So we have lots of capability, and it's through this laboratory analysis of the soils that we can tell the history of the ice under the surface.
Well, let's talk about that. Why did you choose the polar regions there?
Well, NASA has had a theme of follow the water for many years now, and it was only in 2002 that water was discovered away from the polar caps that you could have a chance of landing on and digging down to. In other words, it's right near the surface. And so we're following the water, and we're also taking the next step to see if there's a habitable zone associated with this water ice.
When you say habitable, does that mean somewhere below the surface?
Yes, down at the ice-soil boundary is where we're looking in particular.
How far down will you be scooping?
Well, it's probably only a few inches, maybe 5-6 inches.
Mm-hmm. And do you get a change then from the surface soil to something else?
Yeah, that's the thing. If in an ideal mission, you would start with the globally distributed dust that we know is covering most of Mars, and you see it in the major dust storms that happen periodically. So that'll be right on the surface. We'll analyze that. And then as we go down beneath the surface, we'll look at the modification of the volcanic soils by the action of liquid water. In other words, has the ice ever melted and changed the chemistry and mineralogy of the soil?
And you'll be able to tell that with the laboratory on board.
That's correct.
How long until you get any results?
Well, we get images right away. Mm-hmm. And then we need about a week to get our instruments prepared and our arm positioned to actually dig the trench. And then about a week or two into the mission, we start analyzing our first samples. Those will be the surface samples. And then probably by the end of the first month or month and a half, we'll have dug down at least near an ice layer, and we'll be analyzing a new set of samples that are associated with the ice. So it develops slowly. There's no quick answer. Mm-hmm. By the end of the summer, we think we'll have gathered enough data so that we can start interpreting what we've learned and try and make some mm-hmm. you know, real statements about what's going on with these northern plains on Mars. Mm-hmm.
So just so we're sure on this, this is not a rover. This is a stationary base, right?
Well, I'll tell you, Ira, if you look at a picture, a high-resolution picture of this territory, it looks the same from one end to the other. So why would you land one place and want to go to another place? I think we're going to land in a place that's typical of the northern plains, and our mission is to go beneath the surface.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What would be a wow moment for you if you discover something? What would it be evidence of organic material down there?
Evidence of organic material is the big wow moment. That's the holy grail of the search for life in outside of the Earth. And it doesn't mean that life is there to find organics, because it could have come from asteroids and comets, which are known to have impacted the planets, or particularly Mars, over the last several billion years. So we expect organic material on Mars, and we're curious as to why it's never been found.
Mm-hmm. How does this fit in? As we have a lot of Mars probes there now visiting and circling and orbiting and rolling around. How does this fit into that total picture?
Well, if you look at the two rovers, for instance, they are studying rocks, and the rocks were formed early in the history of Mars. So these are ancient parts of the geological fabric that make up Mars. And what they tell us is that Mars was once, early in its history, a wet place where there was water involved and on the surface, and a place where there could have potentially been a habitat and maybe even life evolved. Nobody's sure about that. But we are now looking at the current history on Mars, modern processes taking place today. And so we're really looking at a place where we think there's two good reasons to go to the polar climates, and they're the same reasons we go on the Earth. One is that climate history is written into the polar regions, and two is that it preserves organic material. It's like the deep freezer in your kitchen. That's where you go to store things. So we're hoping that some of the secrets of Mars are preserved in that ice.
So if there had been some sort of life before and no longer living, it might still have evidence of it there.
Yes, and you do see that on the Earth in the ice regions, the permafrost regions, say Siberia. Mm-hmm. You can actually take a little chunk of Siberian soil and ice and analyze it for its DNA structure and recreate pretty much the tree of life on Earth. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing how well materials are preserved in these icy regions.
Can you analyze the DNA of something if you found it there?
No, we can't. So we're looking for a habitable zone, and the question as to whether a habitable zone is actually inhabited will be left for future missions. So we're a stepping stone in that regard. But as of now, Ira, there is no signpost that tells us where to land to find life on Mars. There's no clues of any sort. So we're kind of taking the next step, which is not the final step.
Mm-hmm. The Phoenix mission builds on some of previous Mars missions that didn't make it, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Mars Polar Lander and the Surveyor 2001 lander.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we are the Surveyor 2001 lander. It was built in the year 2000, ready to fly, and its mission was canceled and is stored in a box. And we inherited that box and all the good things and bad things that went with it.
So you just renamed it?
We renamed it. That's correct.
So it's parts that were left, or is actually the whole lander.
It's the whole lander. It was already built and partly tested. And so we're using that. But because its sister spaceship, the Mars Polar Lander, had crashed on landing, we knew there were flaws inside of it. So it's like looking for hay in a needle stack there. We had to find all the flaws that were inside of the spacecraft and correct them.
How many did you find?
Oh, probably around 20.
Wow, it's lucky you found them.
Yeah. You know, the real question is, did we find all of them? And we think we did, but Sunday will be the test of that hypothesis.
Give us the timeline. What's going to happen on Sunday?
Well, about, 7 minutes before we get to the planet, we'll be feeling the gravitational pull of Mars.
What time of the day would that be here on Earth?
Well, in the Pacific time, it would be about 4:39.
Mm-hmm.
And we would finally be landed safely on the surface at 4:53. Now, you have to remember that it's actually happened 15 minutes before on Mars. So
right.
Whatever happened has already happened when we start getting the signals. So we transform from a cruise stage, which is what we've been for the last 10 months, and we release the cruise stage solar panels and guidance devices, and we start our entry, and then 7 minutes later, we hit the upper atmosphere at 12,500 miles an hour. And for 3 minutes, we're slowing down, and as we slow down through the upper atmosphere, we heat up to 2,600 degrees.
Wow.
We have to be prepared to withstand that heat. And then we're going down at about 1,000 miles an hour. We release our parachute. But because Mars has a very thin atmosphere, the parachute will not slow us down enough to land. We slow down to about 150 miles an hour, and we can't land at that speed, as you might imagine. So,
and you put the brakes on. 37
seconds before getting to the surface, we release from the back shell that's holding us to the parachute, and we drop in free fall. And the only thing stopping us from crashing is 12 thrusters that fire and a guidance device that keeps us steady. And then we land at 5 miles an hour, and our legs are like shock absorbers, and they prevent us from damaging the spacecraft.
Right.
So that's the plan.
All right, Dr. Smith, we'll be keeping our fingers crossed for you and watching around after 5 o'clock Pacific time. See what happens.
Please, wish us luck.
Good luck.
Thank you, Ira.
Peter Smith, principal investigator from NASA's Phoenix Mars Mission and senior research scientist in the Lunar and Planetary Laboratory at the University of Arizona in Tucson. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, switch gears and talk about E. coli computing. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday from NPR News.